from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning in our opening hour, State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Torlakson will join us to talk about the new roadmap for educating California's kids. The four-year plan is an updated version of his 2011 blueprint, and it focuses on teacher shortages and hastens the state's move toward Common Core standards. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. In this hour, we're going to talk about the future of California schools with State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Torlakson. But first, we want to bring you an update on the Rocky Fire, which has burned more than 60,000 acres in three Northern California counties. The fire is currently only 12% contained. And for an update, we're joined by Lorraine Dechter, who is news producer with KZYX in Mendocino. And she joins us from Ukiah. And Lorraine Dechter, welcome to Forum. Good to have you.
Well, it's nice to be on your show, Michael. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you. And really, I know things have been really pretty terrible up there, and I want to find out exactly where we are now. I said 12%, which doesn't sound in many people's ears to be where it should be, but the weather has changed somewhat. It's more temperate now?
It is, but the fire does create its own weather, and it's been really hectic in that regard because so much water is being dropped on it. There's a lot of moisture in the area. Of course, you've got a big lake, Clear Lake, with 100, miles of shoreline, and all that water being dropped in such, it kind of creates its own storm. So the flames rise up, and one of the public information officers, Scott McClain, described it like the thunder cells break down, and it's like a big anvil, and it drops down, and then it makes winds go out in 360 degrees. So this is the biggest problem these firefighters are saying is the wind is just crazy, and it really doesn't matter if the forecast says there's very much wind at all. It's creating its own wind, and it's going every which way, and it's almost impossible to keep contained.
You've got firefighters coming in from all different places, I know, and what's the situation in terms of the adequacy of the water to fight the fire in this drought?
Well, I think those big lanes were big claims were probably dipping in Clear Lake, but there's a reservoir there, there's a little dam, and there's some other places close by that have some water, so they don't really have to go too terribly far to find the places that they're picking up water.
And evacuations, where are we on that score?
Oh, it was hectic last night, it was hectic the day before, and the day before, it's been about, I think we're in phase five now, it's a little hazy, but even last night, there were new evacuations that were going through. There were people who had advisories, and they were moved into mandatory evacuation, but it took a long time to move them out. A lot of these people are in ranches in valleys, and they're way in with only one road in. So the personnel at the fire camp were saying it just takes a very long time to move people out, so it's kind of a constant thing. And they seem to be doing a lot of it at night. They emptied Wilbur Hot Springs, a couple of camps, and a lot of housing areas at night. And they also, just yesterday, late afternoon, put in another evacuation advisory for parts of Clear Lake and Lower Lake. And they thought those communities were pretty well secure. They had a lot of dozer lines, and most of the fire was through the Cass Creek Wilderness. And the way you could see it if you were looking on a map is Highway 20 is on the north part of the fire. Highway 16 is on the east part of the fire. Both those highways are closed, and they're trying desperately to hold the fire up there. So it was kind of a surprise to go back down to those lakeside communities of Clear Lake and Lower Lake and say, yes, these people are still very threatened.
Well, 12,000 people have been forced from their homes or are being advised to leave, and this fire is certainly of great concern and will remain so until it's under control. And let me thank you for joining us, Lorraine. Appreciate your update.
Thank you so much.
That's Lorraine Dechter.
Have a good day.
You too. And she's news producer with KZYX in Mendocino. And for more on wildfires, you can join us at 10 a.m. We're going to debate new proposed federal legislation that would boost logging of dead trees as a way to prevent fires. And now we want to turn our attention to California schools as scheduled this morning. As the start of the new school year nears, the state superintendent of public instruction, Tom Torlakson, joins us to discuss his new roadmap for educating California's kids. It's a 4-year plan. It was developed by a task force of educators, which updates the 2011 blueprint for great schools. And the plan calls for better teacher recruitment and training, a new accountability system, and continued implementing of Common Core standards. Superintendent Torlakson joins us for this morning's opening hour. Tom Torlakson, good to have you with us.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. And let's begin by, well, there's lots to talk about in this plan. But you've been talking about it rhetorically as being like a rocket ship, which will lead California way ahead of where it presently is. And people are putting it now still, unfortunately, near the bottom in many ways. And we can talk about that as well. What about this plan particularly is going to move us forward, in your judgment, and move us forward at the kind of rocket ship rate you've been talking about?
Well, we have an action plan here. We have a work product of some of the brightest minds in California that are dedicated to improving public education. We're on a comeback. We saw in the first blueprint major progress in stabilizing finances in the school and beginning the implementation of teaching to the new standards in math and English language arts, getting ready for the science standards. We have an action plan. I would call it a roadmap, or we could even say a star map. We have a new North Star, which is bringing education in California to the very top in the nation where it used to be. And we do that by investing and by having the resources, of course, and giving the schools more local control. The voters voted for Prop 30. It's done a great deal to help the governor, the State Board of Education, myself. We're united in investing more money in our schools, so the economic recovery of California is also boosting us. It's like a second stage of a rocket taking off. We had a lot of progress in the first 4 years, and this lays out new areas we need to tackle that weren't issues 4 years ago, and issues that we need to build on that were successful over the last 4 years, but need further distance to go.
Well, let's look at this roadmap or rocket trail, the trajectory that essentially has a number of parts to it. You've got a lot more local school board control over spending decisions, and we might take up later in this interview what's going to happen after Prop 30 runs out. But local control over funding formula will mean the districts will have to come up with goals. They'll also have extra funds for low-income and disadvantaged. How is this going to be measured? How is it going to be quantified, and how much money are we talking about?
Well, this year, the budgets for the school districts of California, there are about 1,100 school districts teaching, educating 6.2 million students. They got a $14 million boost, and it was invested wisely in many categories that are working, that are proven, that are exciting students. One of those big areas is career technical education. We've invested $1.5 billion over the last 3 years. My department's already given out $500 million in grants, where we have coalitions of businesses, high schools, community colleges, universities, looking at the regional economy and seeing how we can have our students prepare for careers and to be ready for college and have the critical thinking skills necessary. So the new standards, again, are part of this whole effort and targeting the money, spending it more wisely, like on career tech, also helping schools where the needs are the greatest and making sure that those resources get to schools with large portions of low-income students and English learners and foster kids. And so targeted investments are making a difference, and we're seeing a comeback, I would say a renaissance of public education in California.
We're talking with State Superintendent of Public Instruction with the Department of Education of California, Tom Torlakson. And funding, Tom Torlakson, according to Education Week at least, now this is based on data from 2011 to 2012, is still near the bottom. They have California ranked as 46th in school spending.
We need to invest more. I'm an advocate. I'm a teacher, and I know the needs in the classroom. And while we're recovering, we're not back in all California schools to where we were before the Great Recession. We are, however, moving up from the bottom. The latest numbers say we might be 39th, we might be 37th. But regardless, we know that the money we're investing is being spent wisely. You asked earlier a little bit about the accountability. We give more local control because we think decisions are best made close to the schools and the community, so community leaders and teachers and parents can be involved in that process. But we're also asking districts to set goals and measure their outcomes. So districts are going through an historically detailed and exciting process engaging the community in establishing local priorities, writing up an accountability plan, and then that plan will be reviewed after a year and measured as to whether it hit the targets it set out, and if not, how to correct course to make sure those targets are accomplished and hit.
Well, let me go to a couple of things that have been hit on about accountability. According to news reports, the Accountability Committee will be co-chaired by a couple of union leaders. We're talking about California Teachers Association President Eric Hines and Association of California School Administrators Director Wes Smith. And, you know, your critics have been saying for quite some time that you're too close to teachers' unions. It came up in the last election when we had you and your opponent on. And I wonder how you respond to that. But also, there's a lawsuit in the works now about misappropriation of funds, not reaching high-need students, and concern about some of those funds going into teachers' salaries. I believe it's Shirley Weber out of San Diego who says that there was never any concern here to raise teachers' salaries. That wasn't part of the deal.
Well, a couple of things. First, on accountability, there's different dimensions of accountability. One is, are you living up to the plan that you laid out? The other is how you measure on an ongoing basis. Do you define success as two data points on, say, English language arts testing and on math testing? Or do you have a multifaceted accountability system? We are moving. California is, I think, leading the way. We're at the front end of the states in the nation moving to have a multifaceted accountability system that doesn't try to have everything be defined just by test scores. It should also be defined by graduation rate, by how we help students prepare for careers, how we provide them the resources and classes to get to college. So that is the accountability that you mentioned. There are two leaders, and actually they're not both union leaders. They are the head of the administrators of California, the superintendents and principals. Wes Smith is going to be joined by Eric Hines, who is with the California Teachers Association. So you have total balance. In fact, this report, this Blueprint for Great Schools, is also a product of administrators, school superintendents, and teachers and teacher union leaders and parent leaders all working together to hammer out priorities. Now, as to the other issue you mentioned here in terms of how the money's being spent and is some of it being spent for salaries, yes, there's some need for salary increases across the state. Many teachers did not get any salary increases for 6-7 years. And so they have fallen behind, and we have a severe teaching shortage, and part of that is due to the fact that teachers have such a low salary. So increasing salaries is something districts are doing. They're negotiating. They're working out priorities. And by and large, I think the public is accepting that there is a need for new programs, career education, like we said, also early childhood, early learning programs. And there are a variety of needs which must be met, restoring summer school, having after-school programs. But part of that will be, you know, how do you compensate teachers and retain the best teachers at your school and recruit new teachers and administrators? So I believe that the districts can be trusted. And, yes, some districts may stray off their target. Then you take corrective action. Those plans, the accountability plans of each district, will be reviewed by the county superintendents of each of the 58 California counties. And if a school district is off course for 4 years and the county superintendent's help has not been able to turn them in the right direction, then those districts will be coming to me. They'll have to come to me and the Department of Education for reviewing and holding them accountable.
And you're going to focus in this plan of yours, this four-year plan, on teacher shortages, that is more recruitment and more training, not only for teachers, but more recruitment for principals, and particularly with emphasis on bilingual and special ed?
Bilingual, special ed, and math and science. We have a huge need in our economy for STEM-educated, that's science and math-educated students, graduates from high school can go straight into great jobs, or high school graduates who go to college and then go into great jobs. But we're importing talent in those individuals that are educated with these skill sets from all around the world. We should be having our kids have a chance at these great jobs.
You also mentioned tests, Superintendent Tarlickson, and there's this new online test that 3.2 million students just took. It's more of an interactive test, no more pencil, paper, multiple choice, and this goes along with Common Core, which I know has been rebranded to the California Way, and I want to talk with you, of course, about Common Core and its implementation. But the test scores, students are getting them back pretty soon, and there's been a lot of, well, public warning that the public itself will see a dip in these scores. Can you give us a sense of what these test scores are likely to be and maybe explain why the students are expected to do more poorly?
Well, it's not more poorly. It's looking again at a new framework of learning. What are the skills needed for the 21st century? What do our employers need in skill sets? What do our colleges need? So we are going away from such a huge emphasis on rote memorization and multiple choice bubble testing to computer adaptive testing. And we're measuring skills that weren't measured before, like critical thinking and problem solving, like being able to take evidence and backing up your arguments, evidence to back up your hypotheses. Teamwork and good communication skills are part of what these 21st century skills are all about. So we're leaving the old-fashioned, the pre-digital era testing regimen behind. And so it's going to be like comparing apples and pineapples, that you're not going to have a one-on-one correlation. And when we began the old testing system 14 years ago, the scores were low to start with, and then you set rigorous standards, rigorous benchmarks that have to be met. That's what's going to be happening here. We're going to be doing a new format, and again, we successfully did the first run at it this year. 3.2 million students took the computer adaptive test. Out of 3.2 million students, by the way, Michael, only 900 students had to take it by paper and pencil because they did not have access to the internet. We had an initiative, which I dubbed my initiative, No Child Left Offline, and we invested hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in computer technology and bandwidth. And so this is a new era. We're going to be explaining to teachers themselves so they can explain it better to parents how these scores look and where they're headed. But I'm very confident we're headed in the right direction. And this new set of skills, which in some parts of the country have become very divisive and there's partisan bickering, in California we've stayed united around this new set of skills is good for the economy. It's good for our students to compete in the global economy and to succeed at college and beyond.
Yeah, I'm struck by how California has had so little tension and little contention when it comes to so-called Common Core. Of course, I suppose the argument is that a lot of this has to do with the fact that in California, pretty much everybody's on board, though we're talking largely about a Democratic state, but not tying the test scores to teacher evaluations has made a great deal of difference, too. Wouldn't you say?
I would say yes. And we reached out to business. I traveled around the state and talked to leaders of the big business groups throughout California. And when employers heard that this is the type of standard that leads to these types of skills and this type of learning, again, critical thinking, problem solving, teamwork, good communication skills, employers said, this is great. This is what we want. We want to see more investment in this kind of learning. And rather than have test pressure right away in the first year of the testing, we put it off for a year, and there will be an ability to compare this year's scores, which we call the benchmarking of these assessment scores, with next year's. And we'll see what progress has been made by different schools, by different ethnic groups. We'll have a sense of data input and data feedback that then we can use to guide better teaching, more focused teaching to students and groups of students in a way we've never been able to do before.
Well, big question, though. Can you maybe explain to us precisely why you think teachers are ready to teach Common Core standards this year? Maybe some concrete examples of how they're prepared in the classroom?
Oh, it's been fantastic, and I've gone around the state again and visited classrooms. What we did do, which is extraordinary, again, the rest of the nation has not invested the way we have. First, we have consensus. We have a governor who believes in it with the State Board of Education. It's mostly a bipartisan legislative support for this approach. And we were able to get in the budget. We advocated for $1.25 billion to do professional development of teachers to enable them to, you know, do this kind of learning where you don't stand in front of the class, you're not the sage on the stage, and you give a 50-minute lecture and a lot of chalk, used to be chalk, on the chalkboard, and students taking copious notes. This is more the teacher, you know, having the students get into work groups, solve problems, whether it's a science and chemistry problem or whether it's a mathematic problem or whether it's a social studies problem. Maybe it's the issue of global warming and is it man-caused or is it geologic cycles and what do you do about it and what kind of civics are there, government responses to global warming. So students get really engaged. The learning is more relevant and it's connected to the real world, and that really motivates students.
We're coming up on a break, and I know our listeners have lots of questions for you about this four-year plan, which I ought to add was developed by a task force of educators. But Tom Tarlickson, say something, if you would, about safety. This is not necessarily part of the four-year plan, or is it? Maybe you can clarify that. But, you know, as far as, like, bullying incidents and threats of injury or with weapons and school property, California is still near the bottom.
Well, that is the first priority. That is the overriding priority. You have to have a safe learning environment. You have to have a safe set of routes to school so students feel safe coming to school and not being recruited by gang members or, waylaid along the way to school. So that is the top priority. I believe that our school districts are doing more and more, and we have, you know, an emphasis on the whole child. We have laws as well as programs that are against bullying and saying we need to reduce bullying. We've added restorative justice programs to many of our schools so that students that have acted out or have bullied another child, another student, they have counseling and then they work together to get back in class and be more respectful and understand what the problems are with safety and with, you know, harming other students verbally.
Well, let me bring our callers into this. I know many of you have questions for the superintendent, and you can certainly join our program with those questions or simply let us know what you think about what you're hearing so far. The four-year plan is an updated version, again, of his 2011 blueprint and focuses on teacher shortages and really hastens the state's move toward Common Core standards. Feel free to join us now at our toll-free number. It's available to you. It's 866-733-6786. Again, we welcome your phone calls and your participation, and you can join us at 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I'd like to hear from you, so let us hear from you. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Our guest this hour is State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Tom Tarlickson. He's with, of course, the California Department of Education and has a four-year plan now to essentially really accelerate the advancement of education and the advancement of children being educated here, particularly under Common Core and its implementation. And we do welcome your involvement in the program. You can join us a number of ways. You can call us at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org or post questions or comments onto our website, kqed.org/forum. And you can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We're going to your calls and emails here. Just let me bring one more question into the mix here, Tom Tarlickson, and that is, where are we on teacher evaluations? The Vergara case is still in the courts, and you had promised some changes on the campaign trail before winning the election. Some legislation has actually made it through in Sacramento. How do you plan to continue reforming this process?
Well, again, the accountability task force we talked about will be defining success and other ways to measure student progress. We want to see how teachers are doing in helping our students succeed. There's a bill going through this year in the legislature that I'm supporting that I think is a balanced and great approach to improving teacher evaluation. One of the things that's so impressive to me is that teachers are eager to learn, to improve in their profession. Just last Friday, 15,000 teachers around the state of California went to the CSU campuses around the state. San Francisco, Cal State San Francisco was one of those locations. I was at the Sacramento Cal State campus, and teachers are very eager to learn, and we have programs that we're promoting. This year's budget actually addressed $500 million of additional help to school districts to set up peer evaluation systems, to set up mentorship systems where starting teachers get support, they get feedback, they get guidance. And then if a teacher isn't improving or isn't cutting it for the high quality that we expect and need for all of our classrooms, then they're counseled out of the profession. So I would say the vast, vast majority of teachers are doing a great job. They're eager to learn the new state standards and the new paradigm of teaching. And it was shown that these teachers across the state, 15,000, took time off their summer to participate and share best practices, best ideas. And we are really focusing on building the capacity of the teaching profession and the administrators who help guide the process.
Well, one more sort of question I'd like to add on, and that is because I know listeners have a lot of questions, and I want to give you an opportunity to answer the questions they have. But there's a website called Wallet Hub, and I don't know much about it. I know you're probably familiar with it, but it came out with results recently saying that California had the ninth worst school system in the country because of low reading scores and low math scores and high dropout rate, and the worst in the nation in high number of pupils per teacher, only ahead, I believe, of D.C. and Indiana. So my question to you would be, and we talked about school safety, too, which had a very low ranking. If you looked into a crystal ball here at your rocket trajectory, to use your metaphor earlier, 4 years hence, where is California likely to be? Or where do you hope, not where do you hope it will be, where can you almost maybe believe it will be?
Well, this plan, the momentum that I referred to, this energy, a renaissance of support for public education that I feel, I think it's heading us in the right direction. And some of it has to do, again, with spending the money more wisely. And I think local control and involving the community in the prioritization process is going to be part of the answer to strengthening our system.
Yeah, but forgive me, support. Superintendent, you've been using a lot of language like world-class education system and, you know, moving way up and so forth. And I'm wondering if you can codify that.
Yes.
I mean, I don't necessarily ask you to look into a crystal ball here, but is California now near the bottom 4 years hence going to be now near the top?
That's our goal. In fact, we went from 74% 3 years ago graduation rate to 81%. The career education courses I mentioned are at 95-98%. I want our graduation rate in the state of California, and I believe we will make it, to be at 95%. 4 years from now. We had revenue issues, and that's part of the problem. When you compare our revenue per student to Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Hampshire, New Jersey, we're far, far behind. And guess what? Those states that have invested the most have the highest academic returns. And so we've gone from 3 years ago, $7,000 per pupil, to $9,000 per pupil last year. And now this year, $10,000 per pupil. But Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Hampshire, they're more in the range of $14,000, $16,000, $17,000 per pupil.
And we've got Proposition 30 expiring up ahead.
I know, and I'm very concerned about that. It was to be a temporary measure, and it will sunset. But the money that is coming in, $8 billion more a year, is desperately needed. It needs to be continued in some form. There needs to be a replacement of that that goes to the voters and gives the voters a chance to measure the progress, to assess, are the schools doing well? If so, let's continue and find a way to keep those taxes coming in. $8 billion a year is part of the reason we're seeing such a boost and a surge in California.
All right. Let me bring our callers in. We go right to Mark in Alameda to begin. Mark, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for a great program, and thank you, Superintendent, for your work on behalf of our state. I'm a middle school counselor in San Leandro, K-12 And we still have counselors in San Leandro, which is great. My question is, how can we make sure to validate and make progress in the role of support personnel in the schools? So school psychologists, nurses, counselors are crucial to safe school environment and to community safety as well. So we've made progress in salaries. When are we going to make progress in the funding for support personnel?
Mark, that's an excellent question. And again, underscoring that we're making progress, but that we have great, great needs, and we're nowhere near back to where we were before the Great Recession. And so counselors is a great example of an area where that's a place where students can go, talk to their counselor about problems they're having or bullying that might be occurring, or getting guidance as to the courses they need to take to enter the college of their dreams and head along that track. So we need to invest more, again, back into school nurses. Librarians in school campuses are very important. The library today is different. It's got computers. It's got digital learning opportunities. But we need those librarians back in our schools as well. So the answer, and this is a message to Californians and listeners here today in general, is be involved in your local process, because not all the answers are going to come from Sacramento. The responsibility has been put to the local school board level. So be involved in setting priorities. And I find around the state that there is a drive to get more of the support staff to reach and teach the whole child. You need some of the support staff as well as the strong academic staff in the classrooms.
And Mark, let me thank you for the call. We want to bring more of your calls on here. And let me go next to Vineet in Cupertino. Vineet, welcome.
Hey, Michael.
Hi.
I'm calling from Cupertino, and I'm talking about school districts like Cupertino Union School District. I have two kids. One goes to special ed, the other goes to normal ed. I see that in the normal ed, I see that they've given iPad and stuff like that. But it's a special ed that the superintendent talked about. And it really, for lack of a better word, it sucks big time, right? There's like an abyss. It's like an assembly line. And my son goes to high school right now, and I have no visibility into where he'll be going. So what is being done for special education in a good school district?
Tom Thurlickson.
Well, thank you, Vineet. This is a challenging area, but an area that needs more attention, as you just pointed out. There is an effort to have as many students as possible brought into the regular classroom. There's incredible new learning aids. For instance, for students who can't talk, your eyes can be illuminated and measured, and you can look to answer questions on a multiple choice, or you can even talk, and a computer will translate your answers through your eye movement. Because you can't talk, your eyes can have an impact on communicating what you know and what your opinion is about different course challenges and course curriculum. In the federal government, when they enacted some of the special education programs, they promised more federal money. So one of the things we're doing is uniting to have our state representatives, Senator Feinstein, Senator Boxer, and our congressional delegation do more to help us get the funding that was promised by Congress for special education. So again, this is an important thing. Parents, if you have a concern about the special education program at your school, talk to the teacher and talk to the administrator and talk to a school board member. They're elected and they need to know if you feel your son or daughter is not getting the quality or level of service they deserve.
And let me thank Vineet for his call. Again, we'll go right to another caller here. And Marianne, join us. Morning.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for being on the program. I am just turned 50, and I've been teaching for 16 years. I'm a single parent, but my kids are gone. But next year, they're out of the house. They're in college. But next year, I'm going to have to give up my apartment because I'm not going to be able to afford it anymore as a public school teacher. And I'm going to have to go back to renting a room like I did when I was 20. And I don't live in an expensive apartment. I live in a blue-collar neighborhood.
Let me ask, since you bring up salary, Marianne, and I'm sorry that you may have to leave your apartment, but I'm actually looking at an email from another listener who wants to know, and this may be right on the point here, how do teacher salaries compare to salaries in private schools, charter schools, or the rest of the country? Can you give us a rundown on that, Tom Turlickson?
I wouldn't have a ready offhand answer to that, except to say that some charter schools pay more than the teachers get in the regular public schools. There's such a variety around the state. Some private schools, some parochial schools pay less than the public school teachers. And it varies from district to district in the state of California. You have districts in the mountains parts of California and the Sierras or on the coast. And they don't have the resources to pay teachers as much as they do in, say, San Diego or somewhere in the Inland Empire.
But with this local control, you are going to have, and I know the union backs this, and as I said, you mentioned San Diego because there is this assemblywoman in San Diego said it wasn't the intent of the legislature, but there's going to be attempts to raise salaries, aren't there?
Absolutely, and I support that. I mean, salaries are too low. We are, again, having a huge difficulty attracting enough young people into the profession and having others stay in the profession. Our turnover rate is just way too high. We have something like 20% teachers leaving the profession after 5 years. Right now, we need 100,000 teachers in the next decade. With the baby boomers retiring, we're going to see, again, a need of about 10,000 new teachers a year. And the enrollment in teacher training programs has dipped to an all-time low because the career, the profession, is attractive in so many ways, but it's very hard to sustain yourself on the income from and then the retirement income from being a teacher.
So what do you say to
sympathize with Marianne?
But I wonder what you say to Assemblywoman and Democratic Assemblywoman Weber, who says the pay increases never were the intent of the legislation.
I think that may be a bit of a misinterpretation of her position. I think there's three parts to the local control funding formula and two parts. There's some debate as to whether those can be used for salaries. But you can do a market survey and show if your district is below the market level of surrounding schools, school districts, and you're not competitive and you're losing talented teachers and you can't attract talented teachers, that is going to hurt all the children in the school. So the law does allow for teacher salaries to, in general, to come out of the first level of the local control funding formula and out of the upper two levels that I mentioned. If you have a concentration of English learners or poor students, you still may be able to invest in salaries because that will help boost the talent and quality of the education taking place in those schools where they can then better attract the talent they need.
And more of your calls for Superintendent Turlickson. Miriam, join us. You're on Forum. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is addressing the whole idea that there's an equation between how much you invest and the quality of education that you get. And I've got a very politically unpopular suggestion to address the disparity between black and white students in their achievements levels, which would be to change the funding mechanism so that instead of having property taxes fund schools in the area of the property taxes, have the taxes paid into a single state fund for equal distribution among schools throughout the state. And my bet is that you would have the disparity disappear within 10 years.
Tom Turlickson.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Miriam, for your views on that one. And I would say that we've just gone through an historic change in the way schools are funding. It was rather Byzantine. It was rather unpredictable. It was fair. It was unfair because of the inequities that the old systems had. So I do believe that this new system is better, and it does give credit for high poverty areas, for English learners, for concentrations of foster kids. So school districts get more money, more resources, because it takes more to educate a child who comes from poverty, who doesn't have books at home or doesn't have a literacy tradition in their family. And it takes more for English learners to learn the English language and be proficient and then keep up with all their subject matters. So I believe this current system may need a little bit of fine-tuning here and there, but I think it's historically correct. It's a just system. It's morally the right way to go, I believe, and effectively for investing in the future of our students.
Let me thank Miriam, and we will go to more of your calls. A lot of callers waiting to talk with the superintendent. But let me go to some tweets and online comments and questions, emails that are coming in. This is someone from the Cal Budget Center who tweets, what accountability measures will be in place to ensure local control funding formula is actually used for disadvantaged students?
Thanks for the question. And again, this is part of the whole idea that while it's local control, and we took a whole host of categorical programs, I think something like 20 of them, and put the money all in one pot and gave the money to school districts and say, you prioritize how you want to spend your money. And so the accountability that goes with the local control is also a responsibility we all have to participate in the local budget process. Now, 1,100 school districts each year will produce an accountability plan based on input from parents, from business leaders, community nonprofits, and others interested in a better education. So I would say focus on getting to that local level, and then when the year comes up after the target's been set, if they haven't met their goals, there'll be a public discussion of that, and there'll be a public explanation needed by the school board, by the administration, as to why they didn't make the targets and what they're going to do about it. Then the county superintendents, again in 58 counties, will look at each of these accountability plans and do a judgment as to how well did they meet the targets they set out and provide them with additional help. One other unique feature that's part of this California way is we created a new collaborative for education excellence, which is five-member board. I happen to be one of the five members on that board. And that is a place where districts can go that are struggling to meet their goals. If they're not making their accountability plans, targets correctly, then they can come for help. And other school districts will pay for experts to come into schools and help them correct course, add new programs that would help with the goals they've set out.
Again, our guest this hour, Tom Torlakson, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, and David writes on our website as a veteran California teacher who has collaborated with teacher leaders statewide. I'm grateful we have an educator leading California forward. Looking around the country, we can see how many states have let their education policy bend in the winds of political trendiness, only to have divisive conflicts erupt without improving schools. Our state is making progress through more local control and engagement efforts to improve the teaching profession and labor management collaboration. Here's a question from Anne, who says, while the push to get every kid to college is wonderful, not everyone is meant to go to college. What about focus on more experiential learning in the classroom? We need people with skills and trades that I fear are becoming lost. My daughter dislikes science because it's all about theory. Finally, parents raised money for an in-class dissection, and suddenly science became cool. We need to engage our kids more with hands-on learning activities to get them motivated. Tom Torlakson.
Absolutely. Yes, yes, yes. And we are doing this. We are making a major shift back to what we used to call vocational education, but now it's modern. It's the 21st century skills needed, and it is hands-on, and it's connected to the real world. I mentioned earlier we've got business partners that are part of these coalitions around the state that are creating career pathways. And we find that students, when they determine their future, they decide, I want to be biochemists, or I want to work in computer sciences, they are motivated. They're not dropping out of school. They're doing their homework. They're attending class, and they're going to be graduating at 95% rates. And so, yes, we will see more students going into career pathways. One idea, we develop standards for an apprenticeship program. If you want to go into the building trades, be a carpenter or a plumber, electrician, you can take a series of courses in high school that get you 1 year towards your apprenticeship programs. You graduate from high school and you're ready to go into an apprenticeship program. There are many, many career pathways that are very fulfilling, very much needed for the health of our economy, and pay well and have a good support system that don't involve going to college. We do want to increase the number of our students going to college because many of the career pathways, many of the needs of the economy require the advanced skills that you get at college. But yes, more hands-on learning, more relevancy, you're totally correct. Experiential learning, it motivates students, it gets them excited, and they stay in school, and they're going to be contributing citizens when they graduate.
Well, I've seen the emphasis you've been trying to place on career technical education standards, and certainly give approbation for that. I've also seen, maybe you could codify this a bit, emphasis put on infant, toddler, and preschool early learning foundations. What are we talking about there?
Oh, my gosh. That is really one of the most important topics, and it's part of our report. I run preschool programs and child care programs through my Department of Education for about 350,000. But there's a waiting list three times that long of those students who would benefit greatly. We know how important it is in early in life, from birth. The brain development is 90% finished by age 5. For kids who don't have a stimulating home environment, don't have books, again, at home or parents who read to them, they'll enter kindergarten a year to a year and a half behind. They will have heard 30 million less words by age 5. So we have a huge challenge here, and we know every dollar you invest in early learning has a 3 to 4 time benefit return in greater success of these students, less dropouts, less juvenile delinquents, students who are more proficient in the English language and ready to learn. So we're working on a major statewide campaign. You've probably heard Read, Talk, Sing, the message. We want parents to get books, read to your kids in native language, talk to your kids regularly, sing to your kids, but there needs to be stimulation. The brain needs exercise, and the more stimulation it gets, the better it will be functioning. The child will academically be much more successful. So stay tuned. We're working with a number of hospitals and the doctors groups and nursing groups in California that are, as a young parent comes with a new baby, the doctor will tell them how important it is to read to their child and then give them a book. And when they come back for the immunization shots, another message from a nurse or a doctor and another book. And so we're really encouraging this. It's a really smart campaign to look at the big picture. Investing early in kids will bring us great dividends of success later.
Well, since you're talking about books, I'm looking at an email from a listener named Jason who says, we've heard a lot about STEM, but how does a 4-year plan address or move STEM to STEAM and the need to provide our students with a renewed focus on arts education and the tools necessary to compete in the creative economy? In other words, what are we doing here about the humanities and arts and all of those kinds of areas?
Well, thank you, Michael, and the listener who brought that up. It's near and dear to my heart. That's part of the Renaissance I'm referring to, is we're bringing back art, music, drama, dance. We're bringing back civics along with science, and it's a well-rounded education that we want our students to have. And we know in so many ways, not only does participation in the arts, whether it's music, dance, drama, excite kids, keep them in school because there's something they really like there. It's also tied into how the brain works and how it can work better, more creatively. The arts, I think, open up many pathways for students to succeed. And you can teach so much through the arts about geography, culture, history, different peoples of the world and how they express themselves. So we're seeing strong programs coming in. The legislature has granted some additional funding for the California Arts Council, and I'm very big on districts restoring and expanding the arts programs.
We're getting, a flurry of very important questions, and here's one on our website from a listener who writes, many schools are in disrepair, affecting academic learning and basic safety alike. This is well documented by KQED's On Shaky Ground series, showing how the state has grossly underfunded seismic safety in schools across the state. Facilities for modern academics are in an even worse state. Will Tom Thorlickson support a state facilities bond for schools to help solve these problems?
Absolutely. This is a huge need. We have so many of our schools now that are age 75, 80 years old, 100 years old. They need modern HVAC systems. They need the digital wiring, the bandwidth to, have this computer learning that goes on around the clock at our schools. So this is huge. I was very much involved. I was the architect of the formula that brought us 4 school bonds, $9 billion each, that were successfully passed by the voters and went to work investing in improving our schools, both earthquake safety measures. I'm glad you brought that up. The shaky ground report was excellent. But also just modern school facilities that show respect for the students and will enhance the learning when the students are in those buildings. We deserve to have facilities that are, you know, matching the needs of the 21st century for our students. So I am advocating strongly for a school bond on the November ballot for 2016. And I hope we will have a consensus in the legislature and the governor's support for investing in our schools
I'm sorry, just one more tweet and then one final question, because Jay tweets, you can't compare national teacher salaries. We have some of the highest cost of living dollar to dollar is a bad comparison. And I think that's fair, particularly in urban areas, San Francisco and Los Angeles. But here's a question, if we could just address a question from a listener named Mary Tom Torlakson. When can we get back to class sizes under 20 kids for elementary school classrooms?
Again, an excellent point. We had, I think, a wave of success that came from smaller class sizes. I think as a parent or a grandparent, you would want your child or your grandchild to be in a classroom that's more like, you know, 25 or 26 than 36 or 40. Getting more individual attention from the teacher and a chance for individual feedback is very important. Mostly this will be, again, a local control issue. So as districts are setting their priorities, please be a voice, be active in advocating for smaller class sizes again.
Tom Torlakson, good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us this hour.
Thank you, Michael.
Tom Torlakson, again, a state superintendent of public instruction with the California Department of Education. And when we return, we're going to talk about some federal legislation that would boost logging of dead trees as a way to prevent fires. It has some environmentalists upset, as you might imagine. Stay tuned for that. Forums produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Jim Bennett. Engagement producer, Amanda Stupai. Senior editor, Dan Zoll. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.